Hello, FCS Nation. It's time for your show. I'm your host, Kevin Marshall. This week, I'm coming to you from lovely and not snowy or all that cold, all things being considered, Missoula, Montana. Join me like he does each week. It's the co-host of this program, the quarterback of this program, Mr. Stone Labanowitz. Stone is coming to you from the land of shorts and t-shirts on Thanksgiving, the sunshine state of Florida. Well, regular season is over, and we do have a playoff bracket to unveil to you, but you're going to have to wait till segment two because we got a little unfinished business from the regular season to get to right now. Up first, number four, South Dakota, 29, number one, NDSU, 28. Stone, this game looked like it was out of reach for the Yotes. What was that, a 20-play touchdown drive for what people thought, and some of them even tweeted, was right there for the Missouri Valley Football Conference Championship. All the Yotes did was pick themselves right back up, go down the field, get back in the football game, stop the Bison, get the ball back, and win a very signal victory for their program. This was a whale of a football game. And it's, I think, one of the things this ball game showed, Stone, was how important that two-minute timeout has been this season in FCS and in college football. That's an extra clock stoppage. And that helped the Yotes out for sure.
No, you're spot on there, and it's glaring in a lot of moments during games, Kevin. But for me, the one thing that stuck out was the fact that there's true belief in this Yotes locker room. There's true belief. And they were led by Tice, none other, early in this game to jump out to a 14-0 lead. And I think this was a question none of us had the answer to. Did this Yotes team actually think they could beat a team like the Bison? And were they capable of doing so? They showed both of those things, regardless of how it happened. But I think coming out of the gates, being better running the ball than North Dakota State, you ended up winning the ball game. So I think there's a lot to take away from this game, but there's true belief in this Yotes locker room, and that's major.
South Dakota outgained the Bison 391-340. Aiden Bauman had a day, y'all. 272 yards through the air. It was still kind of ugly in the penalties department for South Dakota, and a little bit of lack of discipline almost cost them in this one the same way that it cost them in Brookings. They were able to overcome that by going 6-12 on third down and 1-1 on fourth down, and that one was a very pivotal point in the ball game. A great victory by South Dakota over North Dakota State, 29-28. Number two, Montana State, 34. Number 10, Montana, 11 in the Brawl of the Wild. This one was never really a football game, Stone. Montana State pretty much did what they wanted, when they wanted, and they did it how they wanted. Very impressive ball game by them, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Was very, very impressed with Tommy Malott. Was very, very impressed with Adam Jones. But that injury bug still kind of bit the Bobcats in this one a little bit, losing a couple of running backs. But Adam Jones, I just mentioned him, he ran for 197 yards and a pair of touchdowns. That's really all you need to know about this football game.
There are spots that they're injured, and we often bring that up, but you wouldn't be able to tell if you're just tuning in for the first time, and I think that's what this team collectively has built culture-wise, and they're just a buzzsaw right now, and we didn't have many expectations coming into this game for the Grizzlies, and when you see a young buck like Adam Jones just rip off the kinds of runs that he does in a game like this, I mean, when he opened it up at 27-3, we all knew where this was going, and we were able to kind of shrug and almost say that this is exactly what we thought was going to happen. So Montana State is rolling right now.
326 yards on the ground for the Bobcats. Ho-hum, another 300-yard day on the ground. Number three, South Dakota State, 45. Missouri State, 9. I expected the Bears to put up a little bit more of a fight. The quarterback is pretty darn good. That offensive line for the Bears isn't an even halfway decent FCS offensive line. It's surely not going to stand up very well on that next level up next season. But the Jackrabbits, another impressive win. They did the things that we were looking for the Jackrabbits to do. The passing game was better. The running game was as it's been all season. This looks like a Jackrabbits team that's peaking at the right time, Stone.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And I think their stars are coming about. And when you watch a guy like Griffin Wilde get loose in a game like this, which was touted to be competitive but wasn't, you're forcing three and outs back to back to back, opening this thing up. And you go on that long drive, that long business briefcase carrying drive led by Mark Gronowski. This team has something to prove, and I say that, and it almost sounds like I'm joking. It almost sounds like I'm speaking in hyperbole. This team now, where they're ranked, and after the selection show, and seeing Montana State being favored, feels like they have something to prove. They're on a quest to go back to back to back, and they're playing their best football when it's needed most.
Number five, UC Davis, 42, Sacramento State, 39 in the Causeway Cup. A little too close for comfort if you're UC Davis or their fans. But I just wonder, Stone, 457 total yards given up to a Sacramento State team that at times this season on the offensive side of the ball has looked like it can't get out of its own way. But that being said, UC Davis did have 540 total yards, and there weren't a lot of turnovers in this thing. There was just a lot of going up and down the field. 23 first downs for both teams. A lot of going up, a lot of going down, a lot of going up, and a lot of going down, and a lot of touchdowns. This UC Davis defense has impressed me most of the season. They did not look good last Saturday, though.
When we talk about UC Davis, you're not really able to put a finger on any of their results, any of their score lines. Like Kevin mentioned, how many yards they let up. This was just one of those games. I think when you get late into the season in this conference, this is to be expected. This point total was set very high before they even kicked off. Cloud's done a phenomenal job in his first crack at it. I think to cap this regular season off with an in-conference rival like Sac State in a game that has a name to it and to squeak out of it, nonetheless, the score line, it pays dividends. Ends and you're able to get back in the lab and lift the weights, watch some film, and be ready to roll when it really matters. And you got one in the chamber.
Number eight, Richmond, 27, William and Mary, nothing. This is the first time Richmond has shut out William and Mary in the Capital Cup game since 1973. And Stone, there aren't a lot of stats that I give where stuff has happened before I was even born, right? An impressive, impressive deal. Richmond, look, I think one of the best comps that I can come up with in my mind is this Richmond team reminds me a lot of the Furman team from last year. They don't blow people out usually. They play a lot of close games. They play a lot of 27-14, 27-17, 28-17 type ball games. But they win every game. They've won 10 in a row. So this Richmond team isn't flashy. They aren't particularly sexy. They're not going to break the scoreboard, but their rushing defense is what leads this team. You're not going to be able to run the ball in Richmond. So you're going to have to go to the pass, and the pass defense has been pretty good. And William & Mary just had nothing. Zero. Zelch. Nathan. Nada on offense against the Richmond Spiders 1 week ago.
You actually nailed it on the head with these score lines, right? Kind of winning games by scoring 28 points. Well, they're averaging 28 points on the dot in this season, and they're not going to win by wide margins. They just don't have that ability. This Richmond team's about it. And we had a chance to talk to our honorary captain of the week, TJ Baldwin. And he said in the midst of this run, when I believe they had won six, that the vibes are really high in the facility. The Richmond's a team that I don't think you want to see. They're going to cruise by Lehigh, which we'll preview. But the Spider team's rocking and rolling right now.
Here are the FCS Nation Radio Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week from 1 week ago. The National Offensive Player of the Week is Efton Chisholm from Eastern Washington. Chisholm, 13 receptions, 119 yards, and one touchdown. And Efton Chisholm caught a pass in his 53rd consecutive game, breaking Cooper Kupp's FCS and Eastern Washington record. Chisholm's 120 receptions this season also broke Kupp's EWU record for receptions in a single season and ranks fourth all-time in FCS history. Efton Chisholm also led the FCS with 120 receptions and 1,300 receiving yards. Efton Chisholm is one of those cats who's going to go down as one of the best to ever put on a helmet and some shoulder pads in FCS football. The National Defensive Player of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual, is Makese Grace from South Dakota. Last week versus North Dakota State, six solo tackles, three tackles for a loss, and two sacks. And Grace ended the regular season leading the Missouri Valley Football Conference in tackles for loss with 17. And sacks with 9.5, despite playing one less game because somebody had to whoop and cough. Congratulations to Efton Chisholm and Makese Grace for being the FCS Nation Radio National Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, brought to you by Northwestern Mutual. Here is the FCS Nation Top 25 final regular season poll of 2024. Number one, Montana State. Number two, South Dakota State. Number three, South Dakota. Falling to number four, North Dakota State. And rounding out the top five, UC Davis. Number six, the Idaho Vandals. Number seven, the Mercer Bears. Number eight, the Richmond Spiders. Number nine, Incarnate Word. And number 10, rising to number 10, Illinois State. Number 11, the Montana Grizzlies. Number 12, Villanova. 13, Rhode Island. 14, Abilene Christian. And rounding out the top 15, the South Carolina State Bulldogs. Number 16, Tarleton State. Number 17, New Hampshire. Number 18, Eastern Kentucky. Number 19, Jackson State. Rounding out the top 20, SEMO. Number 21, Tennessee Martin. Number 22, Tennessee State. Number 23, Northern Arizona. Number 24, Southeastern Louisiana. And rounding out the top 25, the Western Carolina Catamounts. It's time for us to take a quick break. When we come back, Stone Lebanowitz and I will unveil the 2024 National Playoff Field. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Well, Stone Lebanowitz, we're here. It's the playoffs, and it's time to unveil the field for the 2024 FCS playoffs. The number one seed, the Montana State Bobcats. The number two seed, the North Dakota State Bison. The number three seed, the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. The number four seed, the South Dakota Coyotes. The number five seed, UC Davis. The number six seed, the Incarnate Word Cardinals. The seven seed, the Mercer Bears. And the eight seed, the Idaho Vandals. Stone, I know that picking this field is a tough job. And I get it. It's not easy. You're always going to make somebody angry. And you're never going to please everyone, right? But I don't want it to seem like I'm piling on this particular football program, because I'm not. And I think you know where I'm going here.
I do.
But I don't see how you concede Incarnate Word over Mercer in Idaho. Look at who Idaho has played. Look at who Idaho has defeated. Mercer goes to the Southern Conference with one conference loss. They played Bama, for crying out loud. Incarnate Word, their best win is against Northern Arizona. And Northern Arizona's best win is against Eastern Washington. They beat nobody. The only two good teams they really played all year, they lost to. This is not the number six seed in the country. It's not. We're going to have to cosplay that they are, but they're not. This was not earned. This was given. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why.
And I think instead of trying to figure out as to why they were seeded at number six in front of Mercer, in front of Idaho, I think we should forecast more so what's going to happen and who their matchup's going to be. When you look, it's either Eastern Kentucky or it's Villanova. There's a test, right? But that's just step number one, because following them is South Dakota State. So this answer is going to be presented to us in a matter of 2 weeks. And that's more so what I'm interested in, what this committee had to do and how you deal with wins over a Stephen F. Austin team that doesn't have a quarterback. You struggle with a team who's changed their name mid-season. I don't blame you at all for not having any confidence in Incarnate Word. And we've seen the committee run this ring with them in the past. And this isn't the same team that we've seen in years past. So a little confusing, but time will tell. They can lose to either Eastern Kentucky or Villanova very easily if they play the same ball that they've been playing the past few weeks.
And we mentioned Mercer and Idaho, who I feel like kind of got hosed a little bit. But Richmond got hosed too. They're the number nine seed. Number 10 is Rhode Island. Number 11 is Villanova. Number 12, Illinois State. Number 13, Tarleton State. Number 14, the Montana Grizzlies. The number 15 seed is Abilene Christian. And the number 16 seed is New Hampshire. When I look at these, Stone, this even bothers me a little bit too. First of all, I don't think Richmond should have to play this weekend. I think that that is the travesty, more so of the number six seed being who it is.
But Richmond doesn't have a ranked win, Kev. Not a single one.
Well, they do have a win over FBS transitioning Delaware, who the CAA thought so highly of that they decided to give Rhode Island a piece of a conference championship they didn't own, because they lost to Delaware. Richmond beat them, and the CAA gave Rhode Island a participation trophy to share a title they didn't win. Richmond did. So that's where I'm looking at for that one. They won 10 games in a row. Yeah, they lost to Wofford, a Wofford team that was playing really good in the second week of the season. They've won 10 in a row. I feel like Richmond as a team shouldn't have to be playing this week. Going down further, Villanova. We've got 9, 10, and 11, all from the same conference. And guess what? Not a one of them played each other, Stone. Not one. At some point, that league, the CAA, has to be penalized for this, not rewarded. Every other league that's lost teams that have moved to the FBS, they've suffered, their national reputation has, and they've had to struggle to gain it back. The CAA's had no consequences for it. None. Last year, it had a bunch of teams in. They all got massacred. This year, well, we'll see if that happens again. And moving down, Illinois State is going to have to go to SEMO, who's in the field. Illinois State can't host a home playoff game because their own athletic department didn't have enough confidence that they'd be playing at home this weekend to leave the stadium open. It's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard of in my life, right? You're in Missouri Valley Football Conference team. Your head coach is Brock Spack. His mustache alone should have said, we can't go against the stash. We have got to not let the high schoolers play the state championship game at our field the first round of the playoffs, because we have the type of football program that might actually play at home that weekend. Incompetence. Yikes. Then Tarleton State, very athletic team. Montana, number 14. I think Montana should have been a little higher myself. I do. We have them ranked at number 11 in our top 25 poll. It's just a mess in a lot of ways, Stone. The at-large teams to this year's field, Lehigh, Central Connecticut State, Eastern Kentucky, SEMO, Drake, Tennessee State, Northern Arizona, and UT Martin. Now, we talked last week about teams that were on the bubble and how many of them were dangerous, and we came to the conclusion that really none of them were,
yep,
or else they wouldn't be on the bubble. But there are some teams who are at-large bids of this thing who could be very, very dangerous in this first round. But looking at this field, Stone, it's interesting to me that without the super hyper regionalization, we're getting better games in this first round. And I like that. I like the way it's set up this year. I just don't like the way they shuffled the teams in it.
There aren't many directions you can go. Of course, you can moan and gripe about a Richmond seeding. Like I said, they don't own a ranked win. That now is criteria, right? That tells us everything we need to know about the stock that they're putting into ranked wins. So pay close attention to that. Or if you're still searching for answers, there's one right there. But for me, it's pads. And you talked about you liking a lot of these first round matchups. What's not to like? I mean, seriously, to watch a Richmond team try to win 11 in a row, regardless if it's a Lehigh team, doesn't matter, because then they're walking into an Idaho matchup in the dome. That's popcorn right there. I love these first round matchups. I think the shuffling that they did do, they landed on a few good spots here. And we're going to get into one that has me honestly itching, and it's the point spread that was given for the Montana Grizzlies-Tennessee State game. Obviously, Eddie George and company going to Washington Grizzly, but there's something that we want to talk about. Again, we think the books are wrong. I love it. I like these first-round matchups. I don't have many gripes. I do understand the top 10. And Kev, I have no rebuttal for not liking Incarnate Word seated at 6th with how they've been playing down the stretch, but that's not something that I think this committee has put a lot of stock into. So I love where everything's at right now, and I think this is set to be one of the best layoffs in the, call it, 5 years, in my opinion. So I'm excited for this one.
I mean, FCS Nation, y'all could just take everything I said right there with a whole big old grain of salt, because they only put one SoCon team in there. I could just be totally and completely butthurt over that. That is a very good possibility. I think everybody who listens to this show knows that, but that is one of the talking points, one SoCon team. And well, the reason for that is that there wasn't a clear number two in that league this year, and the SoCon, well, I know some people don't like to hear it, it's SoCon'd. That's why they had one team in a 12-game season. I think we're going to call this from now on, when this happens to somebody else, Stone, we're going to say they Chattanooga themselves, or they choo-chooed themselves. If Chattanooga schedules an NEC team and a Pioneer League team rather than Tennessee and Georgia State, they're in the playoffs, don't
right.
you think?
Oh, I mean, right? It has nothing to do with me thinking. It's a legitimate fact based off of what we've been shown right now.
Yeah, they choo-chooed themselves. So that's what I'm going to call it going forward. Don't get choo-chooed. Don't Munson yourself out of the playoffs, for those that get that reference. And all of that being said, FCS Nation, stick around. The preview segment's coming up next, where Stone LeBanowitz and I will break down and preview every playoff game taking place this week. I know you'll want to hang out for that. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. Thanks for hanging with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for the preview segment. This is where Stone LeBanowitz and I take a quick trip all over FCS Nation. We're going to preview all the playoff games taking place in the first round of the 2024 FCS playoffs. Up first, Lehigh is at number 9, Richmond. Stone, Richmond, winners of 10 straight. Lehigh, not too shabby themselves. They've won 5 in a row. But we kind of know, I think, what to expect in a Patriot League versus highly ranked CAA matchup, right? This is not the Holy Cross team from the last 2 years, who did not look like a Patriot League team at all. Lehigh kind of does, and I think Richmond kind of looks like an older school CAA team that's highly ranked. I don't like this matchup for Lehigh on the offensive and defensive lines.
No, I don't, and Lehigh's strength is running the football, and Richmond's front seven is, like we've mentioned all season long, a top 10 front. So I don't like this matchup at all, and if there's one thing that Richmond wants to do to debunk this we have no ranked wins theory that is slowly starting to build. I know it's Lehigh, and you can easily point the finger, but if it's a convincing victory of 20+, we're going to have to take this Richmond team seriously, and so are their opponents.
Well, if you're a running football team, you don't want to go up against Richmond. You pretty much nailed that on the head. Richmond allows just 128 yards rushing on the ground per game, Stone, and they're 21st in FCS rush defense. Not a good combination for Lehigh, but they're not a flashy team. We discussed that in segment one. Central Connecticut State is at number 18, Rhode Island. All that stuff that I said about Rhode Island, I don't think any of it applies this week. Central Connecticut State snuck in these playoffs, and good for them. Duquesne was the best team in the NEC, but the NEC is the definition of a one-bid league, right? Duquesne really had to win that game to get in the playoffs and get the auto bid from that league. They didn't. They laid an egg the last week of the season, and Central Connecticut State beat them. They win the conference. They have the auto bid, and they have the honor, sir, of going to Meade Stadium to take on Rhode Island. Rhode Island, pretty good offensive football team playing with the backup quarterback, but it's not a bad deal when your backup quarterback used to play for Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers. So, not too shabby for a backup at that position this late in the year. I think Rhode Island probably handles Central Connecticut State fairly easily.
Yeah, they will, and with that backup quarterback, I think Hunter Helms has done a phenomenal job, and he is a name, and he's somebody who walked into Rhode Island with expectations to be in the playoffs and win these types of games, hence why he's on the roster, hence why he's in that state. Why else would you be there? This is a game that Rhode Island wants to win and wants to win big in. And if Devin Farrell can get healthy, this team becomes even better. And we're talking about a team that's 10-2. And obviously one of those losses to an FBS squad. So this team knows how to win football games. I don't think they'll sweat this one. I think Rhode Island's going to roll here. This is a beautiful spot for them.
Malik Grant's a player to watch in this one for Rhode Island. Excellent running back. He totes the mail. He gets the job done. Expect him to have a big day. Eastern Kentucky is at number 11, Villanova. Eastern Kentucky, Stone, I like this team. They remind me a lot of Richmond in a lot of ways. They don't win pretty. They don't light up the scoreboard. They just win. And I like the way they play football. They're tough. They run the football. We've seen them not have very much success recently with that high-powered passing offense. Don't you remember? What was the quarterback's name? You had to make fun of the way that I said it. Do you remember? Parker McKinney. Right? And they lit up the scoreboard and they got beat a lot. A lot. They got back this season to play in Eastern Kentucky football. Run the ball. Play defense. Grind it out. Villanova, man, this was a team that, weren't they in our top five to start the year? I'm pretty sure they were.
Yep.
And they played their way down as low as 15 or 16. They kind of rose back up at the end of the year, and it wasn't really anything they did. There was a lot of losing that went on in front of them. I think by the way that this conversation is going, I'm not a big fan of Villanova. Can you tell? I don't know what to expect from Villanova. Connor Watkins, one of the more veteran quarterbacks in this country in FCS football, but hasn't played like it.
I think one thing to take into consideration here is Eastern Kentucky's last two opponents, Tarleton State and Central Arkansas. Tarleton State is a team that we know likes to light up scoreboards and to squeak out a win at this point in the season with a team that is just surging in confidence, one that's noted. In Central Arkansas, I know playing with a backup quarterback, but having to break down David Walker tape, having to defend a guy like Shon-Derrick Powell, who played well in that game, I think that pays well for a Villanova matchup. Eastern Kentucky has won five straight. Villanova's been up and down. You never know what to expect. I don't even want to call this a blind spot, but I would side on the fact that I don't think people notice or are paying attention to this Colonels team. So I think Villanova needs to be weary.
And in the weirdest situation in the entire playoffs this season, number 12 seed Illinois State is going to go to SEMO. Stone, what is SEMO? Who is SEMO? We're in the first round of the playoffs, and I don't think either of us really know, which is odd. We ought to know who a team is when they're playing their 13th game of the season, right? This is almost an NFL schedule here, but this is not the best matchup for SEMO. Not a good matchup, even though it is at home.
This SEMO team was ranked inside everybody's top 10. We had them just sniffing the top five at one point during the season. They've lost two of their last three games, and none of them against opponents that were even scary on paper. And Illinois State kind of fits that mold as well. Not flashy, doesn't do anything really well. This is a legitimate coin flip. The odds are going to present it as such. I'm excited. Not necessarily for SEMO, but I still think it's a winnable game, Kev. This is 50-50, however you want to look at it, whatever way you try to angle it. This one, we all have no clue what's going to happen, and that's why we love the FCS playoffs, baby.
Well, if you're Paxton DeLorean, you have to like the fact that Illinois State's pass defense is about 80th in FCS. So you got to feel like Paxton feels like he's going to be able to have a day against this Redbirds defense. Drake is at number 13 seed Tarleton State. Normally, we'd say, well, Pioneer League league team, scholarship football team, probably not much of a game. But this is a Drake team that did go on the road and beat Eastern Washington on that red field earlier in the season. So maybe not your daddy's Pioneer League champion, right? Tarleton State, they have played their way into some close games this season against teams that aren't as talented as they are. They have a tendency to play at a level their competition. I think this might be a better game than a lot of people think, just if you look at the names of the schools and the leagues they play in, sir.
Hate that. Hate that. Tarleton State wins this game by a lot. By a lot. I think four more possessions here. Tarleton State and what they have. Here I go again. The depth of their skill players, how they're able to distribute the ball and how many points they score a game and the yards that they put up. Drake just can't match. And I think the one dynamic here that's interesting is this is a Drake team that has had no success in the early goings of the FCS playoffs, like ever. And this is a Tarleton State team who now finally gets their crack at it, right? Finally completes the transition. They're able to compete. This team's just happy to be here. They're going to play like it. They're going to play loose, free. And when that team is playing like that offensively, they're going to score 50. And I think that's exactly what happens in this Drake matchup here. I love the Texans all over them this weekend.
Two players to watch for Tarleton State. Somebody who you should have been watching all season is Kavion Britton, the running back, 1,750 rushing yards. And Darius Cooper, man, what a receiver on the outside. Almost 1,100 receiving yards and 10 touchdowns. And he'll make some plays against Drake. He's made a play in every football game this season. That'll make you say, wow. Darius Cooper, hell of an athlete on the outside for the Tarleton State Texans. In the ball game that I will be present at on Saturday, Eddie George will bring his Tennessee State Tigers across the country, and they'll take on the number 14 seed Montana Grizzlies. I'm intrigued by this one, Mr. Levanowitz. Tennessee State, they have a quarterback that could give Montana some problems. Ellis cut his teeth for Austin Peay, led them to the playoffs, put up a whole bunch of yards for them. He's been at Tennessee State for a couple of years, and kind of operating kind of under the radar. I don't think we've mentioned him more than one or two times this season as we've previewed Tennessee State games as the season's gone along because they've been either close to ranked or ranked like they are at the end of the season. And Montana, if they have figured out their quarterback situation and it's going to be Logan Fife, I think they probably are able to handle this Tennessee State team. But if they have the head coach playing Russian quarterbacks and musical chairs at the quarterback position based upon how he feels at the time, this is not going to be a good situation for Montana. I hope for his player's sake that they have made a decision and they'll stick with it. I don't have any confidence that that's going to be the way that it's going to be, considering what happened to them last week at Montana State. They didn't play well on the offensive side of the ball. Montana State had a whole lot to do with that. But I do like this Tennessee State team. I feel like their defensive line matches up extremely well with the Grizz. And the Grizz defense has gotten better each week. I'm still not sure that's a very good unit. It's the definition of, you know, some good, some bad, some worse. But that front for Tennessee State is talented. If they can get pressure on Fife or Ayat, the Montana quarterbacks, that could pose some problems for the Grizz. I think the Grizz just try to establish the run, eat up the clock, try to take Tennessee State out of their game on the defensive side of the ball. But if the Grizz don't play well, if they put it on the ground, if they throw some picks, if they do some things that they have kind of done at times this season, they could get hurt by this Tennessee State team. But here's one thing folks need to think about too, Stone. The Tennessee State special teams have been horrible this year. Horrible. And Montana has a fellow who returns punts and kickoffs for them who, I mean, you know, he kind of made a name for himself doing that. He's developed himself into a really good wide receiver too, Junior Bergen. Don't be surprised if they're not trying to kick the ball to him, but they do it anyway, and he has a big play. Special teams have been just a horrible adventure for Tennessee State in 2024.
First, I want to start at this point spread, Kev, 16, 17. You're seeing it with a hook all over the place. It's going to fluctuate. It's not going to end there. Nonetheless, Vegas has this thing wrong. We've seen point spreads similar to this total all season long, and they haven't been able to cover it. Tennessee State here. Want to know why I'm a fan of them? Because I don't even think Montana can score 17 points. I don't. You talked about that defensive line that Tennessee State boasts. It's their bread and butter. It's their pride and joy. And if Montana can't figure things out offensively, which they haven't been able to for the past month, they're not going to score. This will be a low-scoring affair, which will be head-scratching for all of the fans in Washington Grizzly Stadium. And I don't think Tennessee State is going to be affected by this crowd, is going to be affected by this environment. I think they're going to be up for it. We know who's leading the charge. A guy who's played in plenty of environments like this, and environments 10 times, 15 times this. So he's going to have these guys ready. They're glad to be here, just like Tarleton State is. And I think they take advantage of it. This is going to be a very fun game. I think Tennessee State keeps it close for the entire thing.
Northern Arizona is at number 15 seed Abilene Christian. Abilene Christian is an enigma to me, Stone. They beat Southern Utah, they beat Austin Peay and Tarleton State, right? Not by a lot, especially Southern Utah and Austin Peay. Tarleton State, that was a tight ball game all the way, and Tarleton State's pretty good. And they did lose to Stephen F. Austin last week to end the season, right? Stephen F. Austin gave Incarnate Word all they wanted. And if they would have had a quarterback, they would have ended what caused my rant before it would have had a chance to be birthed and get started and rattle around in what passes for my brain waves and my brain activity, right? But Stephen F. Austin closed the season strong. Abilene Christian just didn't. But they have Maverick McIver. He's thrown for 3,675 yards and 29 touchdowns and only five interceptions. Blaine Taylor, great receiver for them, but they can run the ball too. Sam Hicks has over 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns for Abilene Christian. Northern Arizona, I watched that game they played last week against Eastern Washington, and they emptied their playbook, Stone. They wanted to get here and be a playoff team and knew they had to beat Eastern Washington and do it by some points to ease the doubts of the people who were on the committee who look at their schedule and say, well, they didn't beat anybody. They emptied the playbook. Some flea flickers, double passes, there's some reverses. I'm not sure they have a gadget or a trick play left in their bag. I get the feeling that maybe Northern Arizona, with a first-year head coach and how things went to close the season last year, I get the feeling this is a Northern Arizona team that just might be happy to be here, Stone. And I think that Abilene Christian has some business they feel to take care of later on down the line in these playoffs. Tennessee Martin is at number 16, New Hampshire. Tennessee Martin, stout, stout defensive front seven. They have stopped the run all season. Well, that's bad news for them because they're going up against New Hampshire, who don't want to run the ball. Average less than 90 yards rushing a game. But New Hampshire, Seth Morgan, he's a graduate of the Virginia Military Institute under Scott Wackenheim at the time in that spring season when they slung it all over the yard and won the SoCon championship. Seth Morgan was on that team and was a part of it, and all he's done is throw the ball around a yard for New Hampshire. This is a very good passing team against a UT Martin defense that hasn't had the best secondary, but that front seven can cause some problems for New Hampshire. They're going to have to get Morgan off his spot, make him throw the ball outside the pocket. He does not excel at that. That is the recipe for victory for Tennessee Martin.
This game plan's super easy. And for Seth Morgan, what you've been preparing for all week is a really good front seven. We speak about it ad nauseum, but you're getting the ball out quick. A lot of quick game. We talk about them averaging over 200 yards passing and less than half of that on the ground. This team does not want to run the football. When Seth Morgan is distributing, getting the football to all of his guys, and does not let this UT Martin defensive line get to him, any QB hurries, has them more so annoyed and not being able to dial up pressures because you're just wasting and opening sides of the field. I think New Hampshire can actually win this game, and they can win it quite easily because what UT Martin does offensively doesn't really scare anybody. And also, New Hampshire's not that bad on the defensive side of the ball. So I have this game circled because I'm curious about a lot of things, but I do think New Hampshire finds their way out of this one.
Players to watch for UT Martin: Kincaid Dent, 2,000 passing yards, 19 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and Patrick Smith, 1,123 yards and 13 touchdowns on the ground. This is going to be a very interesting ball game, Stone. Can UT Martin force New Hampshire to do things that they're uncomfortable doing? We'll see. I think this is one of the better ball games in the first round. It's time for us to take a break. When we come back, we'll give you an update on our Alex's Lemonade Stand Northwestern Mutual Partnership to end childhood cancer in our time. And FCS Nation, y'all really showed out on Selection Sunday. Give you all the details coming up next right here on FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network.
Thanks for sticking with us during the break. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network, guys. Each and every week, we bring you Alex's Lemonade Stand Honorary Captains of the Week. Well, we let them off the hook. It's Thanksgiving, of course, but Kevin and I do have some updates. We want to go down the standings. We want to talk about where we are at currently heading into the playoffs, how Selection Sunday went, all of the things that go on in one of the coolest partnerships that you'll ever see in all of the football championship subdivision. Kevin, let's start out with Selection Sunday and how it went. It's no secret that the Northwestern Mutual Foundation matched everybody's donation that day, but as far as numbers, which players it went to, and now where things stand, what do you got?
FCS Nation, Stone Lebanowitz, Northwestern Mutual, Alex's Lemonade Stand, everybody's just completely blown away by the generosity y'all displayed on Selection Sunday. We raised $30,000 as a group. group, y'all. We started it with around $22,300 raised, and by 11:59 on Selection Sunday, we were sitting with over $52,000 that collectively, as a subdivision, as 12 fan bases specifically, the rest of you, there were people who donated to this who I know are not affiliated with any of the 12 schools that we have honorary captains from, $30,000, y'all, in a day. $52,000 and over that for the season. I'm blown away. I know everybody else is. I don't have the words, y'all, and I'm a person that makes my living with my words, so that's a really hard thing for me, and I just want to thank each and every one of you who has donated, whether it was on Selection Sunday or before that, or people who will continue to donate to this initiative that will end childhood cancer in our time through Northwestern Mutual and Alex's Lemonade Stand. We're going to go until 11:59 Central Time on January the 5th, the night before the national championship game. But don't wait. Go to FCSNationRadio.com. Top right-hand corner, click on Alex's Lemonade Stand. Pick the athlete that you want to support and donate. $50 funds 1 hour of research into ending childhood cancer. $50. That's a sandwich and coffee for your lunch for a couple days. I implore you to please take part. For those of you that haven't, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart, those that have. Stone, I don't know what we were expecting for Selection Sunday, but I wasn't expecting that, dude.
It's actually quite ridiculous, Kevin. And $52,000+ raised as we stand right now, week 14, as we head into the playoffs. That's more than we raised the entire season last year. Last year, our first go-round at it. Year two, we got our bearings under us, and we are just cruising. And what happened on Selection Sunday needs to be written about. It needs to be covered. And these players should be highlighted more than we do on our platform right now. And the country's done a good job. All of the regions who cover the teams that we here at FCS Nation cover and that Northwestern Mutual has their offices located in, you've seen everybody rally together. And when we go down the list of these standings, just know that every single one of these athletes, their teammates, their coaches, that Northwestern Mutual office that they represent, how much time, energy, effort, their own money that they put into this thing just to make sure it's properly placed in front of all of you so you can learn more about it and also be a part of it. That's what we're doing here. Kevin and myself, we are the glue in this thing. We want to make sure that the fans are tapped into the players. The fans know who these players are, get a chance to see, hear from them, listen to some of the things that they believe in, some of the things that their coaches are telling them in their locker rooms, a deep dive, because here at FCS Nation, we cover it all. It seems like we're doing a pretty damn good job trying to stop childhood cancer from affecting so many families, thousands of families a day all over the country. Kevin, let's go down these standings. Obviously, Mark Gronowski leading the way, but kind of go through these numbers, how much money was raised, how many Lemon Top Challenge posts that they've got up on social media. Let's re-rack it. It's the playoffs. Let's get a fresh slate.
Well, the South Dakota State Jackrabbit fans, through their excellent, excellent group of podcasters, Jackrabbit Illustrated, they're leading the way, y'all. They've raised over $25,000. Wow. And South Dakota, their guy, Aiden Bauman, who hoisted the Lemon Top Trophy, well, they got some work to do. If they want him to be a back-to-back champion, they've got right at $5,000 raised. Javonte Graves Billup, who had a huge touchdown against Clemson just 1 week ago from the Citadel, he's raised about $5,000. TJ Baldwin from the University of Richmond, right there at that $5,000 mark. Chris Presto from Southern Illinois. I know another guy who went to Southern Illinois. He's bald and lives in Florida and was a quarterback. He's got about $4,200 raised. Bo Bellquist from University of North Dakota, fine wide receiver, one of the best in the country. He's at about $2,000. So is Gray Zabel from North Dakota State. Gray Zabel's probably going to be a draft pick, y'all. Another one of those offensive linemen from North Dakota State. He's at about $2,000 as well. Jet Booker, wide receiver from Southeastern Louisiana. He's at about $1,500. David Walker, Senior Bowl invite. Maybe the best edge guy in all of FCS football. Maybe the best defensive player in FCS football from Central Arkansas. He's over $1,000 raised.
But I just want to shout out John Bryce. He put out an article a few weeks ago titled How 12 FCS Players and Alex's Lemonade Stand Make the Perfect NIL Tandem. You talked about these athletes doing something that is greater than their own self-interest. I love that. I would reshare that. I would try to highlight that as much as I possibly could. The first line from John Bryce here stands out to me. It just might be the best name, image, and likeness endeavor in the United States. Could get emotional reading that, could sit here and go on and on and on, but I think simply what we're doing doesn't exist in the FCS. And what we're doing, because it doesn't exist, and to scale with other NIL endeavors that you see in all of the college football landscape, is organic and is led by people who are already philanthropic leaders, teaching our athletes who have very bright futures, the 12 on this list, how to be philanthropic leaders. All of them are going to have an opportunity to at least have a microphone, a camera, a stage, a platform placed in front of them that they can capitalize on. You mentioned Kev, David Walker, a Senior Bowl, a Reese Senior Bowl invitee. Same with Gray Zabel, North Dakota State, both going to be paid a lot of money to play the sport of football. But what are they doing? They're dedicating their college football, their senior season, to fighting pediatric cancer. So this thing just holistically means a lot to a hell of a lot of people. Alongside these athletes are people from the recruiting side of things when it comes to Northwestern Mutual. You have managing partners of offices located in all of the locations that the 12 athletes are in. You've heard them and you've heard how well-spoken these kids are and how close and how near and dear cancer is to their heart and how they've been affected. It's just damn cool stuff what we're doing, Kev. And I know we talk about it each and every week, but for the audience out there, for any new ears, please join us, be a part of this thing and help us take this thing the distance. We're in year two. We've already raised more money than we did in the entire season last year, and the playoffs have not even kicked off right now. We're rocking and rolling, something we're super proud of, Kev. And also, it's something that we can proudly say it's still in its beginning phase. And because of all of FCS Nation and what they've been able to do and how they've been able to take to it, kind of make it their own thing, it's been pretty cool to see. And this thing's just going to keep growing and growing.
And once again, thank you, FCS Nation, for helping us raise this money to end childhood cancer in our time. It's time for us to take a break. When we come back, it'll be the pick segment. This is where Stone and I will pick the playoff games taking place this week. We'll be right back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. And we're back. You're listening to FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. It's now time for the pick segment. Stone Lebanowitz and I will pick the playoff games. We will give you some winners and some losers for every ball game taking place in the first round of the FCS playoffs. First game up is Lehigh at number 9, Richmond.
I like the Richmond Spiders. I think everybody likes the Richmond Spiders, and I did talk about them bringing their briefcase to work. They're going to win this thing 33-20. Lehigh probably scores a few late, but it ain't going to matter. The Spiders roll into round 2, 1 Richmond.
Stone, I get the feeling that Lehigh is one of these teams that's just happy to be here. And Richmond, well, they got plans, y'all. They got plans for a lot more than just a first round, happy to be here type playoff game. Spiders will be too strong up front on both sides for Lehigh in this one. Take number 9, Richmond over Lehigh, 27-10. Central Connecticut State is at number 10 seed, Rhode Island.
Give me Rhode Island. I don't care who's behind center. They're a lot better, this team, in every single position and every single facet that the sport is played in. Give me Rhode Island, 35-13. No sweat. Big margin victory here.
Same story in this one as the Lehigh and Richmond game, I think. I don't think the Rams will have too much trouble here. Win and advance for Rhodey. Take number 10, Rhode Island over Central Connecticut State, 38-17. Eastern Kentucky is at number 11, Villanova.
Cannot wait to see this line come out. I think it'll be pretty close to a pick'em. I do think Villanova will be favored, so it qualifies for an upset special of the week. Number 1 for myself here. Give me the Colonels, 28-27. Eastern Kentucky's played in so many close games this year, and I think Nova, when it matters, will just play a little too close to the fire. Colonels get it done by a point, Kev.
Stone, I don't think this line will be a pick'em. I think Villanova will be favored pretty strongly in this one. I think Villanova's probably favored in this one by more than a touchdown, but I don't like that either. I like this EKU team. Like I said earlier, they win, and they win ugly, and they don't care what you think about it one iota. Villanova's been living on borrowed time for quite a while now. I like Eastern Kentucky here in my upset special of the week, number 1. Take Eastern Kentucky on the road over number 11 seed Villanova, 24-23. Number 12, Illinois State is at SEMO.
Hate that I'm doing this. I just think everybody's going to try to fade SEMO, and this is going to be where they put it together and they play a style of football that we were once used to seeing. thing that we haven't seen in a long time. I think it's just the spot for it. Hoping you're on the other side here with the birds. Give me SEMO. Give me the Red Hawks 35-30 in what is a fantastic game where they are trading multiple leads here. But I got the Red Hawks. They're at home. They can get this thing done. They're fully capable. This defense just has to play. Paxton DeLorean has to at least have four in the air, and I think he can do it.
Red Hawks versus Red Bird. I'm at a conundrum here, y'all. I don't really know what to do, so I'm going to go with number 12 seed Illinois State on the road over SEMO 33-27. Drake is at number 13 seed Tarleton State.
I like the Texans a lot here. 48-14. Drake stands no chance. They never do in these early rounds. This is blowout city. Tarleton State's offense is way too much for the Bulldogs defense.
I would have a tendency to agree, but I think this Drake team is a little better than most Pioneer League teams are. I think this ball game will be close for a minute. Won't be close at the end, though. Tarleton will use that running game to just wear the Bulldogs out. I hate the Drake here. Number 13, Tarleton State wins 34-13. Tennessee State is at number 14 seed Montana.
Listen, there is a world in which Tennessee State wins this game, and it's Draylen Ellis extending drives using his legs. This Montana defensive line is going to feast on Tennessee State's offensive line all night long. But if Draylen Ellis can get outside the hashes, make big explosive throws down the field, and jump out to a 10-0 lead, find a way to finish that first quarter 7-0, and just make this Montana offense question themselves and kind of shoot themselves in their foot, lead them into the trap, all while playing in easily the most ruckus environment that any of these kids, excluding the ones who have transferred from FBS schools, have ever played in. So this one has a lot of implications. We talked about the 16, 17 point spread, wherever you're getting it, whichever book you use. I think it's too much. I think this game ends the way of Montana, but by a field goal. Kev, give me the Grizzlies 27-24. It's free money on the plus 16-17. Take Tennessee State. They're going to be riled up. Eddie's going to have these guys ready to go.
Stone, who do you think is better, Tennessee State or Missouri State?
Ooh, who do I think is better? Missouri State. Who do I think is playing better football right now? And who would I rather not play? I think that is Tennessee State.
Well, Missouri State came into Washington Grizzly Stadium, wasn't fazed by the atmosphere. There'll be less people than normal at a Montana game, even though this thing is on ESPN2 and it's a night game, just because it's Thanksgiving weekend. And the weather, it's going to be pretty good, all things considered, on Saturday night. And let's face it, y'all, Nashville ain't Miami, is it, Stone? It gets pretty
No.
cold in Nashville, Tennessee. It snows there on occasion from time to time. So the fact that it's going to be rather nice for Missoula this time of the year, that's a plus for Tennessee State. If the Grizz will stick with Logan Fife at quarterback, I think they won't struggle to win this ball game. But if they do musical quarterbacks, it could be a long night. And I don't like their chances if they do that. A lot of hemming and hawing about who I'm going to pick in this thing. But at the end of it, I'm going to take the number 14 seed Montana over Tennessee State at home in Washington Grizzly Stadium on ESPN2. Give me the Grizz 34-24. Northern Arizona is at number 15, Abilene Christian.
Yeah, I don't think either of these defenses are going to get a single stop. I don't think we see much of the punt units here. All of that being said, this game will be weird. I'm notching another upset special of the week. Give me the Lumberjacks over Abilene Christian. Abilene Christian's been shaky down the stretch here. Not the team that we thought they were a month ago, but unable to let things go. Won't get into those reasons. Northern Arizona wins this game, Kev, 42-38.
I'm not sure that it's an upset, Stone. I think Northern Arizona is probably favored in this ball game, which is weird. They're on the road and Abilene Christian is seated, but I believe there are places where you're going to find Northern Arizona to be favored in this game. This one's a hard one to pick for me because I'm not sure if either team is very good, to be quite honest with you. But the time for that resume gazing, well, that's over. The Lumberjacks will need to play their best game of the year to win, but I'm not sure that Abilene Christian will have to play their best game of the year to win. I'm going to take number 15 seed Abilene Christian at home over Northern Arizona 35-31. Tennessee Martin is at number 16 seed New Hampshire.
I just like New Hampshire in this spot. I just do. We've been high on UT Martin. We've talked about the front seven and what they can do, but New Hampshire is going to air this thing out. We talked about Seth Morgan and his capabilities. I think he's going to throw the ball 45, 50 times. I think he completes probably 35 plus of them. A lot of quick game, a lot of simple route concepts, half field progression, things to just keep this UT Martin defensive line from being able to shuffle in guys and keep fresh legs in there. New Hampshire, I like him. They're going to get this thing done here, 24-20.
I disagree, Stone. I do believe that that defensive line for Tennessee Martin will get Seth Morgan off his spot. He's a drop back guy. Get him off his spot, get him outside the pocket. He's not as good there. I like Tennessee Martin to win this ball game on the road over number 16 seed New Hampshire. Upset special of the week number 2. Skyhawks win 24-23. That brings us to the end of another episode of FCS Nation on the Palmetto Radio Network. FCS Nation is produced by Mr. Sam Cittadini, co-hosted by Mr. Stone Labanowitz. I'm executive producer and host Kevin Marshall, thanking you for making FCS Nation a small part of your football week. And like I always do, y'all, I'd like to remind you that life's a lot like football. You play by the rules and the penalties won't kill you. Until next week, so long, everybody.